announcements first. So Cindy, are we ready?
Yes.
Good. So homework 3 is to be returned today. I think David is sitting over there in the corner and he has it. Homework 4 is due today, I believe. And the term test is in 2 days. And please notice it is not here. It's in room 1087, which is on the other side of the building. Okay? I will make sure that there is a sign in this room. But if you plan to be late, then you'll miss the first few minutes if you come to the wrong place.
What's the time?
The time is the usual time, 2:10. It's in 2 days, yes.
3 days.
Three days on Thursday. Sorry. I don't know why I keep thinking today. Well, all along I was only teaching on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I find it really hard to get used to the fact that I'm teaching on a Monday. I don't know why. Anyway, read along is Mancris sections 26 and 27, and the read along is, I can't say. Okay, and finally, so the last week or so was about connectedness, which is the context in general topology in which generalizes the intermediate value theorem. And as of today, we're switching to something called compactness. And compactness is the context within general topology which generalizes the maximal value theorem. Or so you may remember from 157 that every continuous function on a closed interval is bounded and attains its maximum. So this is now, this is what we're going to generalize now. Okay? Now, the definition of compact connectedness somehow makes sense. You cannot separate a space into two things that look independent. Unfortunately, I cannot say that about compactness. So in the past, when I taught compactness, I found some excuses for why the definition makes sense. But in retrospect, it's one of those places where maybe it's best just to see the definition and then see how it implies the theorem, rather than spending so much, too much time sort of setting up the philosophical context in which the definition makes sense. So prepare for a definition that doesn't look interesting and only becomes interesting after we prove a few theorems about it. Okay? So here's the definition. So first of all, I guess a few preliminary definitions. So a cover of a topological space, in fact, it doesn't even have to be a topological space, it could be any set. A cover of X is a collection, a calligraphic U of subsets of X. So inside 2 to the X, that's one way of saying it, or if you wish, you can say in words of subsets of X whose union is everything, such that the union over all U inside the cover of U is equal to the whole thing. Okay? So, I don't know, for example, take the real line and cover it by sets that look like from n to n plus 2. Okay? So from n to n plus 2, and then you'll have also, this is for every n, so you'll have the set going from 5 to 7, the interval going from 5 to 7, also the interval from 6 to 8, also the interval from 7 to 9, and so on. And clearly, all of these intervals taken together cover the real line. So let's write it. The real line is equal to the union over all integers n of the interval from n to n plus 2. But I could equally well have taken the closed interval from n to n plus 1. You see, if I took only the open, if I took the open interval from n to n plus 1, that would not be a cover, because I would be missing the integers themselves. But if I take the closed interval here, then that's a legitimate cover. Okay? So that would be a cover if I go from n to n plus 2, or that one just as well, yes?
Is just a one-sided closed good enough, as long as it's the
In
same?
Fact, for this particular example, I could have taken the one-sided closed, one-sided open. Yes. There are obviously many, many, many covers, okay? But, okay. So, second definition. An open cover. So, now I do need my set to be a topological space. So far I didn't even care about the topology. An open cover is a, so an open cover is a cover in which every U inside the cover is open. So for example, this cover is open, and this cover is not open. Okay? And now I can define a, sorry, and one more thing, sorry, definition, a subcover of U, of a cover U, is exactly what you think it is. Okay? So, is some U0, which is a subset of U, which in itself is a cover, such that the union of all U's inside U0 of U is the whole set. Okay? Yeah?
Does U have to be an element of the power set of X? Like, in, I guess, when
not
you're
an
doing
element, a subset.
Or
of
I mean,
yes, it's
well,
a collection of subsets of X.
But I mean, like, in, say, like, when we're doing 257 or something, like the open interval, you could have your the collection could include elements not in X, right?
That's the definition I use.
Okay.
For me, X is the universe. There is nothing outside of X.
Okay.
Now, if we were talking about covers of subsets of X, that would make sense. But right now, I'm talking about covers of all of X.
Okay.
So, okay. And I guess now I can finally define compactness. So. Definition, a topological space X is called compact if every cover of X has a finite subcover. Okay? Every open cover. If every open cover, of course it has to be related to the topology somehow. So if every open cover of X has a finite subcover. So examples. Well, one, the real line as a whole is not compact. Proof? Well, here is a cover that has no finite subcover. No finitely many of these sets will cover the real line. Okay? Two, a finite topological space is compact. obviously, right? A finite set would have at most finitely many open sets. Sorry, a topology on a finite set would have at most finitely many open sets because there are finitely many subsets altogether. So every cover will be finite. So every cover in itself will be a finite subcover of itself. Okay? So, sorry, not a finite, but a finite. Okay? So this is easy. At the moment, we have no examples, but even before we have an example, I want to show the theorem that makes it interesting. After that, we better have an example that makes it really interesting, because this is a negative example and this is sort of silly. Okay? But first of all, let's do the theorem that shows this interesting. So, theorem. If a function f going from a topological space X into R is continuous, and X is compact, then F is bounded. Or said differently, a continuous function on a compact space is bounded. So compare it with the theorem from 157 that a continuous function on a closed interval is bounded. So compact here plays the role of a closed interval, and later we will show that closed intervals are indeed compact. Anyway, just to remind you, what does it mean to be bounded? Well, it means that there exists some number m, which is in itself a real number, such that for every point x, the absolute value of f of x is less than m. Mm. M. That's what I wrote. Okay. So, so I want to give you two proofs. The sort of the proof that immediately comes to mind, and then the sneaky proof, which is much, much, much faster and much easier, but somehow doesn't quite convey the spirit of compactness. So here is the sort of the proof that does convey the spirit. So proof one. Let me first sort of give you the slogan. So the slogan would be, go from local to global, or use compactness to go from local to global, and let me explain. So what I mean is that if you have a continuous function, then it is locally bounded. When you say locally something, you mean every point has a neighborhood in which this something happens. So in fact, I didn't even say that, but there is a notion called local connectedness. A set is locally connected if it's not globally connected, but at least every point has a neighborhood which is connected. Okay? So locally bounded would mean every point has a neighborhood in which the function is bounded. Now, every continuous function is locally bounded. Because, take a point in your space, the value of the function over at this point is 7. So, in a small neighborhood of this point, the values will be between 6 and 8, or between 7 minus epsilon and 7 plus epsilon. So, in particular, in a small neighborhood of that point, the function is bounded. Okay? Now, the value of the function here might be 7 quadrizillion. I don't know if this is a number, but let's pretend it is. Okay? So the value here is 7 quadrizillion. But nevertheless, in a small neighborhood, it will be between 7 quadrizillion plus epsilon and 7 quadrizillion minus epsilon. So it will be bounded by 8 quadrazillion. Okay? So every point has a neighborhood in which the function is bounded. Now, the collection of all of these neighborhoods covers the space. Right? Because every point has a neighborhood. So if you look at all of these neighborhoods, and there will be many, 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 many of them, let me draw a few bigger ones so that I actually cover the space. Okay, but they could be small. But this collection of neighborhoods is an open cover of the space. By compactness, finitely many of these neighborhoods cover the space. So I don't need to look at all of them. It's enough that I look at finitely many. In fact, this would be this one. Well, I only drew finitely many on the blackboard, it would be this one and that one and that one. Okay? Well, in the pictures they don't cover because I still have gaps. But anyway, finitely many of these neighborhoods cover the space. Now, our function is bounded by 8 here, and by 80 over here, and by 800 over here. But I have only finitely many of these neighborhoods, so the biggest of all of these bounds is a bound for everywhere, QED. Okay? So let me write it. Okay? So now let me write it explicitly. So by continuity, every x inside our space has a neighborhood, let's call it u sub x, such that the value of f at, the value of f on any, or let me write it this way, f of y in absolute value is less than 1 plus the absolute value of f of x for any y inside u of x. Okay? So let's call this number m sub x. M sub x meaning the bound near x. Okay? Then u, which is the collection of all of these uxs, is an open cover of x. Indeed, all of these sets are neighborhoods, so they're open. And two, each u sub x contains its x. And the x's could be arbitrary. So the union of all of these u sub x's is everything. So each of these u sub x's, the collection of all of these u sub x's is an open cover of x. And therefore, by compactness, there exists a finite subcover. What does it mean that there exists a finite subcover? It just means that there exists some finite number of points, x1 up to xn, such that the corresponding u's cover the space. So such that x is equal to the union, I go from 1 to n, of uxi. Okay? And then the claim is that the biggest of all of these bounds will bound our function everywhere. So now, let M be the biggest of all of the local bounds. So, in other words, it's the maximum of mx1 up to mxn. And this is the point where I use finiteness. Okay? So So compactness gave me a finite subcover, and the maximum of finitely many numbers is still a finite number. If I did not have finiteness, that would be this set of bounds might have been infinite, and I wouldn't necessarily have a maximum. Anyway, let M be the biggest of the bounds, and I claim that M is a bound for the function. So let y be some function of x, then y belongs to, so since x is covered by the uxi's, then I know that y belongs to uxi for some I. So the absolute value of f of y is less than, as written here, 1 or less than mxi, which is less than or equal to m. So m is a bound for f qed. Okay? So that's sort of the proof that conveys the spirit of compactness, and that we will repeat again and again later for various other statements about compactness. So the idea is something is locally true, so it's true around every point, and therefore you have a cover by setting which it happens, and therefore you can take a finite subcover, and therefore you can deduce that it holds everywhere. Okay? That's the spirit of compactness. And now let me give you the second proof, which is a bit sneakier. Okay? So the proof goes as follows. The union of all intervals of the form negative n to n goes from 1 to infinity, right? If you look at all intervals of the form negative n to n, so intervals that look like this around 0, that union is clearly everything. Is the real line. So x is equal to the union as n goes from 0, sorry, from 1 to infinity of f inverse of the interval from negative n to n. Okay? I mean, this is the collection of points in which the values of f are between negative n and n, but every specific value of f, even if it's quadrazillion, will be between negative n and n for some n. Okay? So therefore, every point of x is inside this union. Okay? Alternatively, this is just a different way of writing the f inverse of the union of the negative n's to n's, and this is just f inverse of r, and f inverse of r by definition is everything. Okay? But anyway, this means that these sets here form an open cover.
I think this I already took a picture of, so I'm fine.
So, the collection U, which is sets of the form F inverse of negative N through N, is an open cover of X. Well, each of these sets is open because it's the inverse image of an open set. And as I wrote over here, their union is everything. Okay? So, by compactness, finitely many of these already cover. Okay? But these sets are nested. So, whatever is covered by finitely many is covered by the biggest. Okay? So you know what? Let me write it in full detail. By compactness, there exist some integers n I go from 1 to k. such that the union I goes from 1 to k of f inverse of n I, sorry, negative n I to n I is all of x. And then let n be the biggest of all of these n i's. And again, it's finite. So x is equal to f inverse of negative n to n. So n is a bound for f. Okay? Again, I've nothing to say. The proof works. It's a bit sneakier than the previous one. And I guess there is nothing really bad about being sneaky, so it's fine. Okay. So far, everything is great, except we only have a silly example of a compact space, and this is a finite space, right? But you see, the theorem is essentially empty. We already know that every continuous function on a finite set is bounded. In fact, every function on a finite set is bounded. So far, we didn't really do anything, okay? And here's the theorem which recovers the maximal value or the bounded function theorem from 157. So, theorem, and again, only here it sort of the notion starts having a real content. So, theorem, the space 0 to 1, so the closed interval, the unit interval, from 0 to 1 is compact. By the way, maybe sort of before proving this, an aside, the open interval from 0 to 1 and also any half open interval, so for example 0 to 1 closed at 1, is not compact. So I can give you two ways to see that these are not compact. Indeed, on, say, take the bigger one, it doesn't really matter, on the interval from 0 to 1, the function f of x is equal to 1 over x is continuous. Okay? So the function 1 over x has its only discontinuity at 0, but 0 is outside of our space. So the interval from 0 to 1 is continuous. Sorry, so the function 1 over x is continuous on the interval from 0 to 1. But it's not bounded. But not bounded. So the interval from 0 to 1 cannot be compact. You know, this is sort of nice, but if you want to go back to the definition, can somebody give me an open cover of the interval from 0 to 1, which doesn't have a finite subcover? Yes?
Union from 1 to infinity of open 1 over n to 1 closed.
Yes. Okay. So here is a second way of viewing, of seeing the fact that this is not compact. So, alternatively, let's write 0 to 1 as the union of, as n goes from 1 to infinity, maybe let's go from 2 to infinity, of the open interval from 1 over n to 1. First of all, this set is open inside 0 to 1. Second, It's clearly a cover. I mean, this union really is all of that. And finally, no finitely many of these sets cover the interval from 0 to 1, and I leave it for you to verify it. Okay. So so anyway, we can now start proving our theorem. So the proof is very similar to the proof of connectedness. So if you remember the proof of connectedness, the idea was to sort of find a subinterval which is connected and show that this subinterval, that you can push the right limit of that subinterval all the way from the beginning, from starting from here all the way to the end. Okay, so you find that, you show that this sub, the biggest subinterval on which it is connected, could not have been midway because you could always push it a bit further. So the idea is to do exactly the same, except replace compactness by replace connectedness by compactness, and, well, change the wording here and there. Okay? So let me do it. So let U be an open cover of the interval from 0 to 1. I want to show that it has a finite subcover. So let G be somehow the set of good points, okay? So, or the set of good intervals, places up to which we can cover with finitely many of the sets in U, okay? So let G be the collection of all points G, G for good, inside the interval from 0 to 1, such that finitely many of the sets of U cover the interval from 0 to G. Or let me say it differently. So for some finite subset U, let me even call it U sub G, of U, the union of all the U's inside U sub G of U contains the interval from 0 to G. Yes?
Can we also just say that the interval from 0 to G is compact?
No. You see, I'm doing something a bit different. I'm fixing the cover in advance, and I'm asking myself which G's are, or up to what G can I cover the interval from 0 to G by finitely many subsets, or by finitely many elements of the given cover. Okay? If I had written, you know, so as an aside, so here is an aside. If I had written G prime to be the collection of all G from 0 to 1, such that the interval from 0 to G is compact, I'd be stuck. This is completely hopeless. Because the interval from 0 to G is homeomorphic to the interval from 0 to 1. It's the same. I have no reason to think that the interval from 0 to 1 over 1,000 is any more compact than the interval from 0 to 1. Okay? So I have no expectation that I'll be able to show anything about G prime. Okay? But this is different. Here I fix the cover in advance, and for one specific cover, I'm asking myself how much of the interval from 0 to G, or from the interval from 0 to 1, finitely many of elements of that cover. Okay, it's a different question. So this is hopeless. However, this will work. But it's a good question because it's very easy to get confused with this point. We're not showing by kind of pushing G or by induction on G that the interval from 0 to G is compact. Rather, we're showing that the specific open cover given here is well behaved up to the point G. It's a different thing. Okay. Anyway, G is non-empty. Why is it non-empty? Yeah?
Well, zero certainly has.
Okay,
is in some
right.
Set.
Zero is certainly in G. Well, it's enough that zero is in G. Right? Because, let's check, is zero in G? So is little g equal zero? Does little g equal zero satisfy this condition? Well, if I look at the closed interval from 0 to 0, it consists of the point 0 alone. Some set from U will cover 0, because U covers everything. And then that specific single set would be a single set that covers 0. So U sub 0 will consist of that single set, and a singleton is definitely finite. Okay, so 0 is definitely in G. So G is non-empty and bounded. I don't even need to show that it's bounded. It's by definition bounded by 1. Okay? So it has a supremum. So let G0 be the supremum of G. So G0 is sort of the farthest you can go with, here is G0, it's the farthest you can go with good subintervals. Of course, my goal is to show that, well, in fact, I should have stated my goal already here. The goal is to show that 1 is an element of G, okay, because if 1 is an element of G, then I'm done, okay? But the first step will be to show that G0 is 1. Okay. So, and the continuation is again very much like the case of connectedness. So, step one. G0 is bigger than 0. Proof? Well, wait, do I at all need this? Or can I go? Yeah, I think I need this. So proof, 0 is a member of some subset U specific, so U0 inside our open cover. U0 is open. So U0 contains the interval from 0 to epsilon for some epsilon greater than 0. So U0 also contains the interval from 0 to epsilon over 2 made closed. So epsilon over 2 is covered, or so the interval from 0 to epsilon over 2 has a finite subcover. Okay? So epsilon over 2 belongs to the good set. So the supremum of the good set is bigger than or greater than or equal to epsilon over 2. And, well, that's what I wanted to show. Step 2. So step 2 is somehow the key step. Step 2. I want to claim that G0 is equal to 1. Suppose not. So proof. Assume or suppose not. So assume G0 is strictly less than 1. Okay? So the picture looks like this. I have my good set, and yes?
Since we've started with an abstract cover, any open cover, and shown that there is a I guess my point is that you already stated that any open set 0 to G is homeomorphic to 0, 1.
Yeah.
So can't you just say that that is homeomorphic to 0, 1?
This is homeomorphic to 0, 1? Yes, it is. Correct. But I'm not trying to show that the interval from 0 to epsilon over 2 is compact. I'm only trying to show that finitely many of the sets in the given cover cover it. I'm not trying to show that every open cover of the set of this interval has a finite subcover. I'm only trying to show that one specific open cover has, or one specific cover has a finite subcover which covers this. Okay? So, okay, so assume G0 is less than 1. So the picture looks like this. G0 is less than 1. Well, first of all, G0 then belongs to the closed interval from 0 to 1. So G0 itself is covered by one of the sets in our open cover. So there exists some set in the open cover that covers G0. Okay? But G0 is also the supremum of the good points. So there is some good point over here up to which is sort of bigger than G0 minus epsilon, up to which we have a finite subcover. So take the finite subcover that works up to G, add to it this little interval that we just found that covers G0 itself, and you got a slightly bigger finite subcover, one element more, which covers a bit beyond G0, contradicting the fact that G0 is the supremum. Okay, so let's write this. So assume G0 is less than 1, then G0 is in the interval. So there exists some, what should I call it, set, I don't know, U0, inside the open cover, such that G0 belongs to U0. But U0 is open. But U0 is open. So for some epsilon greater than 0, some neighborhood of G0 is also in U0. So for some epsilon greater than 0, the interval from G0 minus epsilon to G0 plus epsilon is completely contained in U0. Okay. Now, as G0 is equal to the supremum of G, I know that I can find some set G in, sorry, some point G in G such that G is bigger, right? G0 is the least upper bound of G. So G, capital G, has elements coming as close as you wish to G0. So in particular, I can find a G in G such that G is bigger than G0 minus epsilon. Okay? So, let me continue in the next blackboard. So again, this point G is a good point. So it means that the interval 0 to G is covered by some finite, I think I called it U sub G. In fact, I called it U sub G, which is a subset of U. And now consider U sub G union U0. So just add U0 to U sub G. And my claim is that this contains, sorry, that this is a finite, okay, this is a finite subset of U0, it's a finite subset because UG was finite and we added at most one thing to it. So it's a finite subset of U, which covers, well, it covers the interval from 0 to G using U sub G. And then it also covers, so it covers the interval from 0 to G, but using U0, it also covers the interval from G0 minus epsilon to G0 plus epsilon. But this union here contains G0, contains the closed interval from 0 to G0 plus epsilon over 2. Okay? So, G0 plus epsilon over 2 is a good point. Contradicting the fact that G0 is a bound for G. Okay? Okay, and step three. Okay, so now I know that G0 is equal to 1. I need to still show that 1 is in G. So step three is that 1 belongs to G, and therefore the theorem is proven. And I think I'm out of time to write it in detail. So let me write it, let me just draw the picture, and in fact the details are very similar to what we've already what we already know. I want to show that 1 belongs to G. Well, 1 is the point of the interval, so it is covered by some open set. That open set in inside U will also cover, will go a little bit beyond 1, so it will cover the interval from 1 minus epsilon to 1. Okay? But 1 is also the supremum of G. So there is some element in G which goes beyond 1, which goes beyond 1 minus epsilon. And then whatever finite subcover covered the interval from 0 to G, add to it this open set and you get a finite subcover of everything. So 1 is. So we have a finite subcover overall. And I think even though the details are missing, I'll put a box here and you can add the details on your own. So good luck with the term exam on Thursday. Again, it is not happening here, but in 1087. And David can return the assignment.